Welcome to this week's Extra Innings Podcast here at the Seattle Times. I'm Mariners beat writer Ryan Divish, your host of this periodic podcast. It's like that, periodic, instead of saying like weekly, semi-weekly, sometimes. I went with periodic. It's, you know, thinking here. Thesaurus.com. Try it. Anyways, yeah, this podcast, it's about the Mariners, Major League Baseball, whatever else comes to mind, food, music. We all just kind of just digress into whatever. This week's episode is being recorded on Friday afternoon here in scenic Houston, Texas, where it's about 90 degrees with a very high humidity. It's two-shirt sort of weather, gold bond sort of weather. Obviously, the big news came down late Thursday night when Scott Servais confirmed that Felix Hernandez has been moved to the bullpen. Since Felix made his debut in 2005, he has been a part of the starting rotation when healthy every day since then. But he's been removed because of ineffectiveness. And, you know, it's something that I think everybody saw coming or saw trending towards a possibility. But when it does happen, the finality of it all kind of does strike you. We saw Felix last night walking to the bullpen with Edwin Diaz mid-game, and that was kind of the hint that this is happening. We tried to talk to Felix post-game. He wasn't really feeling it. I'll give him some leeway. It's, you know, it's not a fun day for him, so I expect him to talk to us eventually, but, you know, the wound was still a little raw last night when we tried to approach him. So I called up Larry Stone, who's back in Seattle, and we discussed the move with Felix. And man, it's amazing how much we've talked about Felix on this podcast. It's crazy to go back and think about the number of minutes we've done that. I mean, think about the number of words I've written just about Felix, whether he's going to be good, bad, you know, especially in this kind of period where he struggled with his identity and his results and his success, which kind of dated back to about the end of 2015. So Larry and I discussed Felix, the move to remove Felix from the rotation, kind of where they go from here. Then we got into the lineup change that led to an 8-6 win over the Astros last night, specifically the idea of moving D. Gordon out of the second base or out of the leadoff spot and moving Mitch Haniger and adjusting that way. So we discussed that a little bit. I'm going to warn you, there might be a little bit of weird pauses at a couple different points in my conversation with Larry for whatever reason, and it might be the internet here, the internet back there, but Skype kind of cut out. I'm trying to piece it together so it won't look like there's a huge gap or it won't seem awkward, but if you do notice that's because it cut out, I think, twice. So I'm piecing that together, and hopefully it sounds okay. We will do another podcast, I believe, as well. Larry's joining me in Oakland for the return of Robinson Cano next week. So I'll have Larry in a captive audience. We won't have anything better to do anyways. So we'll definitely do a podcast from there, probably the day after Cano's return. So until then, we'll let you enjoy this week's show. I appreciate you listening, and go ahead and we'll get to Larry. Okay, I forgot to mention this in the lead-in because I just thought of it after I recorded the lead-in, but I'm going to post the audio of Scott Servais talking post-game about the lineup changes and then also about the decision to remove Felix Hernandez from the bullpen. So I'll have the audio of that first before we get to Larry.
You got your 8 runs, so the lineup stays for tomorrow?
I did say 8, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, a great night offensively. Our guys got out after early. You know, sometimes starting pitchers could be most vulnerable in that first inning, and we jumped on them early. You know, Hanny had a great night, deep span. Segura was all fired up tonight, hitting in a 3-hole. So it was a nice night offensively, and we were able to hold on. It was great.
So was that one out of permanent?
We'll see. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But no, it's the guys liked it. I think kind of mixing it up, it was fresh. And, you know, certainly it paid off tonight. We were right on Verlander early in the ball game, and that's when you got to get him.
You get them early and then also be able to add on 2 in the 6th inning. That was big, too.
It was. You know, guys did back off tonight. Again, you know, Haniger had the big night, but all the guys at the top. And then, you know, we got some guys getting on base at the bottom, which is going to be really important that they continue to do that and create opportunities for the entire lineup. So, you know, good way to start the series. You know, if we get a little momentum going here. I thought Paxton tonight, you know, maybe not as sharp as we've seen him in the past. The pitch count got up there a little bit. And I thought late in the game he started just to let it rip a little bit, let it eat. He was probably a little bit more effective there, but it was an opportunity to let him run, try to get through the sixth. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do it, but Vinny did a nice job picking him up.
We haven't seen you do the mound visit without taking the pitcher out very much of it all this year. What were you looking for there?
Well, I think there's certain points in the game, you know, Mel was going to head out, and you know, I think it's good for, you know, I talked to Pax between innings. He wasn't feeling great tonight, you know, just getting through the fifth and kind of let him know, you know, where we're at and really make sure where he was at. And, you know, sometimes you just want to go out there and look him in the eye and let him know. And I thought he went right after. Kemp had a great at bat. You know, it's not like he smoked the ball, but he really did foul off some tough pitches. And you know, I got to give him credit there. But, you know, got to give those guys a chance to finish off the inning. And tonight I thought Pax had enough. Just wasn't quite able to get it done.
Colomay's been absolutely just vital for you guys.
Colomay's been huge. Yeah, Alex has thrown the ball great. Not ideal, you know, to have the up-down where you get the 4 or 5 outs for him. But some nights it just calls for it. You know, where we're at in the ball game tonight. You know, again, Zach Duke actually made some really good pitches on Reddick. You know, we got the matchup we wanted there. It was wasn't able to put him away. Reddick had fouled some tough pitches off, but, you know, Colomay was able to pick us up after that.
The balk obviously turned out to be pretty big for Orlando there.
Yeah, it was. You know, he could have been out of the inning, and then we tacked on 3 runs after that. You know, it's just one of those calls. We also, Paxton had the guy struck out. White struck out in the sixth inning. You know, he did not tick the ball, and the umpire's calling first base. So, you know, it goes both ways, and he ended up costing us 2 runs. If you look at it, you know, we should have been out of that inning. So, I hate to say it, but it's baseball. You don't get all the calls your way. Once in a while, you need to go your way. But, you know, it was a big one. The ball kept the inning alive, obviously.
Paxton now 4-0 against the Astros this year. All your 4 wins, Paxton on the mound. I don't know if you notice or explain something or notice something with him being, you know, rising up to the challenge against these guys.
Well, he's got good stuff. They got a good offensive team, no doubt. He will challenge. He will go after you. And, you know, I think that's the big thing. You know, he had the one leadoff walk tonight, which scored. But other than that, I mean, Pax is going to go right after. And, you know, he's got the stuff to challenge a ball club like this. So, hope it continues. We're going to play the Astros a lot.
You admitted that was as down as the clubhouse has been in a while to bounce back like this. That you had to be happy with the energy as well.
I was, yeah. I think our guys, you know, just talking to a bunch of them today, I get a feel where they're at. Not so much physically, but mentally, you know, because I think some of the mistakes and things that have happened over in the Texas series was a little bit more just not in tune. We needed to play a good ball game tonight and get away from the result. We play a good game. I liked our chances, which we did. I thought we played a really nice game. So, and let's focus on just playing good baseball and then see what happens after that.
It's kind of hard not to notice Felix went out to the bullpen all the game.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to sit down with Felix later today, you know, after we had met earlier, and explained to him that, you know, I thought it was best for him in the ball club at this point, for him to slide to the bullpen. And, you know, there's been a lot going on with Felix. I think a lot of, you know, pressure, whatever you call it, everybody's expectations, where it's at. He's done an unbelievable job as a Mariner. And certainly don't take any of this lightly, but I just think trying to make the best decisions for the ball club, and really the best decision for Felix at this point, but just take a breath. Step back, gather yourself. I still think there's a chance, you know, possibly, you know, he'll let us know. You know, how he performs out there, but, you know, could get back into the rotation. But for right now, where our ball club's at, just to kind of let him take a deep breath and then go from there. So he will be in the bullpen as of now.
Scott, was that a difficult conversation?
Very, very difficult. You know, I certainly respect, you know, him and everything he's done here throughout his career. But, you know, these things happen, and ultimately it's about the team. And, you know, it's never easy. But, again, hopefully he takes it the right way. You know, he'll get a chance to pitch at some point down there, and, you know, maybe he can work his way back into the rotation, but we'll see. You know, he'll let us know on that.
Yeah, do you know who you want to go with on Sunday then? You guys decided?
To be determined right now.
Okay, that was audio of Scott Servais talking after the Mariners 8-6 win over the Astros on Thursday night. And now we will get to the venerable columnist of the Seattle Times, Mr. Larry Stone. Okay, let's welcome in Larry Stone. We haven't talked. When's the last time we talked?
It was a little over a week ago, I think. We were discussing Felix Hernandez's future in the rotation. How about that?
Yeah.
That was timely.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, actually, Larry and I have talked before since then, but just not on a podcast. So
that's right. We do talk quite frequently, actually.
Yeah. Yes. What's going on?
Well, I was at a thrilling Seahawks game last night, which was pretty much simultaneous with a Mariners game, so I didn't get to watch any of it, even though I was trying to follow it on Twitter and on Gamecast and all that. And it was just as thrilling as you would expect a preseason exhibition NFL game to be.
I can only imagine. Yes, and then Larry had to go for a run before we recorded this because he's, you know, fitness guy and trying to make me feel bad. I ran yesterday, but it doesn't look like I'm going to get a run today, although it's also 95 with humidity here, so maybe I...
I heard your run didn't end well in Dallas.
Oh, or yeah.
Or Fort Worth.
Yeah, that one breakfast was a mistake, and then it was on my shoes. All right, well, okay, so... Last night, you see, yesterday we meet with Scott Servais, and it'd been trending this way, and I know you'd talked to me, written a column on this, but it really felt like Felix's spot in the rotation was basically start to start. Like, they were kind of evaluating it as they went, and like the slightest misstep or the worst outing was going to knock him out of it. Well, that kind of came in Texas, and then yesterday... You know, Servais says, well, we haven't made a decision on it yet, which was telling because they had Felix listed and all of a sudden they're making a decision. And then about the fourth, so after the third inning is over with, I kind of look down on the field and I see Felix walking out to the bullpen with Edwin Diaz. Diaz, and sometimes another late inning reliever will go out, they'll stay in the clubhouse for the first three innings, stretch, do whatever, and then go out, you know, after that. And seeing Felix out there is kind of like, whoa. And, you know, I guess he could do that normally, but he was carrying his glove and wearing his spikes and in full uniform. That means, you know, you're part of the bullpen. And I was just like, I didn't know what to do. I hit, kind of tapped Shannon Dreher and pointed to Greg Jones, hey, look at that. And that's when you kind of knew they'd made the decision. What were your thoughts? Obviously, I tweeted it out. When I tweeted that out, did you think, okay, he's going in?
I did, yeah. And... I mean, it was inevitable, don't you think? I mean, there's just no way they could throw him out there for another start. I don't think that would have been fair to the team, and I don't think it would have been fair to Felix. I can't help but wonder if Felix, you know, he may never express this, but is in some level relieved because you pointed it out. After that last game, he looked broken. I think that's the word you used. Mm-hmm. And he looked broken after the previous game, even though he only gave up two runs in five innings. He was not exuding confidence or a positive body language after that one. And the one before that, he was almost in tears as well. I mean, I think his confidence has taken a huge hit, and I don't think he likes going out there and being humiliated. And I've got to think that a break is good for him as well as for the team. You know, it doesn't mean that he'll never start again for them, but in when you're clinging to a playoff run here, I mean, it's tenuous. You can't have a situation like that. Even they gave him, in my outlook, they gave him every chance, more than they would have given Joe Blow, because his name was Felix Hernandez and he's earned that and he deserved that. But it didn't look like anything was going to change. So, you know, maybe now he can, in a different situation and having hit rock bottom, he can seriously tackle what he's got to tackle.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, it's amazing to think this, but I think there was some pressure on him that he was feeling. He knew he was bad. He was being asked about it. He was being asked about a spot in the rotation. I think they made it very clear that a spot in the rotation wasn't guaranteed. And, I mean, he's not stupid. He can go out and look and look by his name and look at the games and what their record is in those starts and where they're at. I do think he was putting a ton of pressure on himself to be good, and I don't think he knew how to. I don't think he knew how to react to the situation because he's not used to it. And, yeah, that game, Like when we talk to him post game, so we walk in the clubhouse in Dallas, and Felix is kind of sitting in the clubhouse manager's office with his head down, just kind of sitting in a chair there, and he sees us kind of waiting by his locker, so he comes out and talks, and he can't really say much, you know, like he just says, you know, I fell apart in the third inning, I lost my command, you know, I ask him, you know, what's going on, I don't know, you know, he said, I have nothing to say, really, basically, like, I can't say anything because I don't know what to say, and there was none of that swagger, you know. Last year, year before, when he was bad, there was always just kind of this belief, look, I'll figure it out. I'm Felix. I'll figure it out. There was none of that in this post game, last couple post games. And maybe he's just resigned to the fact that he can't figure it out right now, or he's afraid that he'll never figure it out. But it was striking. You were there the other day. It's a different guy right now than we've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think a big part of his game over the years has been that swagger and that body language and that attitude that he took out to the mound, that, you know, I'm the baddest dude in town, and you're going to find that out. And,
Leroy Brown.
Exactly. And so when you lose that, I mean, he clung to that when he really wasn't the baddest dude in town, and maybe you can fool a few people for a while, but then once that aura is gone, you can't get it back, and then you're just another guy with poor stuff. And you know, you've pointed out his stuff is good enough to win, but he's going to have to figure out once and for all how to command it and how to use it without thinking that you could still, in the back of your mind, you could still be the old Felix. And and you could tell by his face that he realizes that he doesn't have it anymore. Now the question is, and it may not be this year, it may take an off season of dedicating himself to conditioning and rethinking things and coming back fresh next year. You know, I'm not sure how much of a help he's going to be in a relief role when he was having problems early in games throughout the season. That was a characteristic of his this year. He was getting bombed in the first inning. That doesn't bode well for a reliever, but maybe the reset of a completely different role and letting it all loose early, maybe that'll be what he needs. I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure he'll be used in mop-up roles at the beginning. I don't think they're going to bring him into a one-run game unless everybody is unavailable at this point. But it's a huge mystery of what happens now moving forward.
So after the game, so, you know, we see Felix go out to the bullpen and we, you know, make note of it, tweet it out, whatever. I had written a story saying they were undecided on his if he would start, so then I got to go in and adjust that story. Little did we know, and I should have expected it, that we were going to be rewriting that story again, because post-game, obviously asked Service about it, and that's when he kind of made the announcement, like, look, Felix is coming out of the rotation. And his reasoning was fine. You know, it's about the team. It's about Felix. It's not working right now. It's all, I think, very measured. I'm sure Service kind of thought about what he was going to say. But then we go to talk to Felix, and, you know, he's talking with some teammates and, you know, getting dressed and everything and kind of standing by his locker. And he turns around and says, well, you know, you guys waiting to talk to me? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, I've got nothing to say. And I'm giving him a pass because it's, you know, pretty raw. You know, the wound is still bleeding. It's not even, you know, we're not picking at a scab. The wound is still bleeding, finding out earlier in the day. I mean, this is something I don't know that he really processed would ever happen. And it's, you know, something that hasn't happened. I mean, he's never been taken out of the rotation for ineffectiveness since he made his debut in 2005. So, but it was odd because he has always been willing to talk, even at his worst moments. You know, he hates talking when he's on the DL, but he always kind of begrudgingly does it. It's one of the things that you respect about him is that he is always available. Now, he might not always say everything, but he is always available.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I cut him some slack on the timing of that one. He's earned a little bit of goodwill in that regard by always being there, as you said, for 10 years. I mean, granted, it's always been mostly positive, because he was an ace pitcher. And even when he pitched poorly, he knew that he was going to be good again very soon. Now it's a little different, and this has been a struggle for him this year, but he's always been there. And I have a strong hunch that he will talk to you guys today. And, you know, now that he's had a day to process it, that he will discuss how he feels about it. We'll see. But, I mean, I do think you were right that that was the raw moment. An hour, you know, it was just an hour or two old. And I can understand him just not wanting to deal with it yet. But don't you think he'll talk today?
Maybe, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to give him a few days if he has to. Yeah. It's new. I mean, if we want to wait till he makes his first relief, I that's fine too. It's like, you know, his role is certainly different. I don't think he's quite like Matt Harvey was when he got demoted to the bullpen earlier this year, you know, completely defiant and everything else. But maybe, you know, this is uncharted territory for Felix, and I think everything he's known about himself and the game has been brought into question. So, you know, I think that level of not understanding or that level of confusion is, you know, I'll give him, like I said, some leeway. But yeah, we, you know, he's there. You have to ask just because you're there. But I wasn't expecting much. And maybe, you know, with some time to think about it, you know, I know he talked with Adrian Beltre the other night. If he talks with Nelson or some of the other guys that he trusts, maybe we'll figure out, you know, what he's going to have to say in the coming days.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is just jarring his whole world and his whole outlook and worldview and everything. It's all been predicated on being a starting pitcher and a contributor and all that. And now, I mean, the team, I'm sure he feels like he's letting the team down. He's the weak link in a good season. He's wondering whether he could revive his career. I mean, you know, Tim Lincecum was about the same age and it was more through injury, but he never got it back. You know, once you lose it like this, sometimes you can get it back, and sometimes it's really the end, even though you don't know it at the time. So, I mean, he is under contract for $25 million plus next year. So, yeah, people who are saying, just cut him, that's not going to happen. You got to be realistic about it. You're going to give it another try next spring, you know, maybe by May, if you've put him in the rotation and he's 0-3 with an 8 ERA, maybe then you think about releasing him or something like that, and it's a sunk cost and all that. But you don't do that. You don't do that now with a whole full year ahead of you, I don't think.
No, because you try and drain as much value as you can out of it. Obviously, you're never gonna get the value equitable to $27 million or whatever he's owed, but you try and get something out of it because you already owe that money. That's why it's no different than the Mariners keeping Sean Figgins around when everybody knew that he was done and there was no place. They just try to wring a little bit more out of it until you absolutely know you can't go forward. I think also with Felix, there's a level of embarrassment. I mean, that whole, the aura and the mantra of King Felix, you know, and I don't know that he always understood it at first. Now it's become such a part of him. And like the idea of being this guy, and now that he's not in a lot of levels, I don't think he knows how to react as well. And I think he finds that embarrassing. I mean, people can sit there and say, oh, these guys make a lot of money, and they do. And I'm sure that's, you know, help that's comforting, but personal embarrassment, personal pride, you know, the competitiveness that it takes for these guys to get to the big league level, and then stay there, you know, that is ingrained. And when that's taken away from you, or, you know, you don't perform at that level in front of people that you respect, it is pretty jarring for a player.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The money does not get rid of human emotions. I mean, that's why there's an awful lot of unhappy millionaires and billionaires.
I'd like to be one to find out, or at least try.
that would be nice. I mean, and the other thing is, I think we talked about this before, is that I still maintain, and I think you agree with me, that Felix is not a complete lost cause. There have been enough flashes, even this year, to think that there's something still there, that, yes, it's going to take a drastic mind change, and there'll be a lot of work, but he could still get major league hitters out, and that's why you give him an off season to get in better shape, to work on things, to think things through, and you give it another try. Because there's certainly guys who have reinvented themselves and come back from lower spots than Felix is at right now.
Yeah, this is he's got kind of two reactions to this. You know, either you can use this as motivation to try and fix everything that's gone wrong. I mean, and people can definitely say, you know, he should have been doing this before. His place in this whole situation is earned.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he's done a lot of this to himself, because these issues that he's dealing with now, they were there a year ago, they were there a year before that, they were starting to creep up at the end of 2015. You know, the lack of command, teams figuring him out, you know, the decreased velocity, all these things. But specifically the lack of command and the inconsistencies with his mechanics have been glaring, and it just all caught up with him, and he was a bit naive to think that it wouldn't. And he was a bit stubborn to not try and address this, because he was always a guy that was always the most talented and had the best stuff, and he could do these things, and now he can't. So, yeah, he's got two ways to go. Either it motivates him, or he can sit and pout. Now, you know, you can give a little bit of a grace period for the pouting part of it and trying to adjust. But, you know, realistically, if you're Felix and you want to be back in the rotation by the end of this year, or certainly next season, then this process of trying to fix it starts now. And it's not like the Mariners aren't willing to help him. I mean, Mel Slotomayor is more than willing to try and fix this. But until he kind of figures out how to consistently command the baseball and pitch in a different mindset, it's not going to matter. I mean, people talk about the velocity. Yes, that covers up some mistakes. But he's got to learn to spot the baseball and not fall behind and all these things to have success. I mean, we've talked about it before. He's got all the peripheral velocities and kind of movement pitches as Mike Leake. You know, he doesn't have a cutter, which I think he could add. He has all those kinds of qualities in terms of pitches and movement and velocity. Mike Leake is a serviceable contributing big league pitcher. Felix can be that guy. I just refuse to believe that he can't.
Yeah, but that's humbling in its own self to have your goal to be Mike Leake when you've been Felix Hernandez.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, I'm sure that wrapping your brain around that as an aspiration is tough for him.
Well, you could say CeCe. I mean, look at CeCe. And that's a guy that Felix really respects and likes. Now, granted, Felix isn't left-handed, but.
Yeah, no, I think CeCe is a great comp for Felix at this point. He was a 100-mile-an-hour guy early in his career, and he is now a smart command type pitcher. And we'll see.
We won't talk about CeCe's conditioning or anything like that.
But remember the 1 year he became a vegetarian and lost a lot of weight, and
he's terrible.
Pitch well. So he says, "Forget that. I'm gonna pig out again." And he also stopped drinking, right? Didn't he go to rehab?
Yeah, and that was probably a big thing. What was the thing where CeCe would eat like an entire box of Captain Crunch berries though for breakfast? Like he would have one of those big bowls, and he just kept dumping in Captain Crunch berries, and would eat one every day. I mean, you think about how much sugar that is.
Oh man,
teeth hurt.
Makes my brain hurt.
Oh, no. Does Felix make another start this season?
I'm going to say yes. I could see them sneaking one in at some point. Maybe he'll have a couple of good relief outings, and whoever they get to fill that spot doesn't do well. So I'm going to predict yes. In some fashion or form, he will have another start.
Yeah, if they were to get eliminated or something, too, I think they'd run one back out there.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was wrapped up, like I said, in the Seahawks game. I didn't see where Service announced who the start. Can you splice that?
Yeah, go. You were saying?
Oh, I was saying. I did not hear if Service announced who was going to start in Felix's place. Did he announce that?
He did not. They said TBD. Which is to be determined for people that don't know. Erasmo Ramirez obviously is the logical candidate, but they're making him start again on Saturday. because he had struggled a little bit in his last outing. Which, you know, if he starts on Saturday, it sort of lines up with Felix. I mean, it's a good limit. I'm curious to see how they do that. Maybe they spot start Ross Detweiler or Rob Whalen or something. Whalen hasn't been very good.
How about Casey Lawrence? Didn't they call up Casey
Lawrence?
Yeah,
I mean, Casey Lawrence is here, so if he doesn't pitch, they could do – boy, it's not like – that's real inspiring going into, like, finale against the Astros. Hey, well, maybe try this guy. Might try this guy.
No. Or, and the other possibility is that DePoto could make a trade, you know, not one of the an August trade to pick up an arm.
He should be kind of considering that, honestly.
Yeah, you know, I think he deserves a little bit of criticism for not getting a starter at the trade deadline, I think.
It's not like you didn't see this coming a little bit with Felix.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not, you don't just snap your fingers and get a starter, and I know they don't have much trade capital, but the arm, the two relievers that they got have been a disaster. Oh. Warren and Zach Duke, particularly Duke. I don't know what's going on with him, but it's almost to the point where very soon to where Scott's going to be very reluctant to bring him into a game in a tight situation because he's been pretty much a disaster.
Do you know what Zach Duke translates into in Polish?
What's that?
Mark Zepchinski.
Yeah. Well, hasn't he walked the last two guys that he's been brought in to face, one with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
And I think he's had a couple times where he's gotten the outs, but I think out of the six times he's come in, I think four have been poor outings, poor results.
Yeah, like yesterday he actually threw some decent pitches to Reddick, but he, like, you know, kind of like Zepchinski, he doesn't have a finishing pitch. You know, he's not a wipeout left-handed specialist. He's a ground ball left-handed specialist, and that didn't happen.
He does have a track record, and so he probably will come back. But just the early returns have not been good, and the same with Warren.
Yeah, if you're talking about starters, the A's went out and got Mike Fiers, and Mike Fiers is Mike Fiers. Okay, let's not romanticize what he is or isn't. He had a great first start with the A's. I think he went like six innings without allowing a hit. But the Mariners technically could have claimed him on waivers by waiver rules, because of it goes the day of the goes by record the day of the waiver release or claim. The A's had a better record than the Mariners, I'm pretty certain, on that day. So that means that the Mariners passed him up. Now, like, he's a 1.4 WAR guy this year, and he was a 0.1 guy last year. I mean, essentially, Erasmo Ramirez is kind of about the same. And I guess maybe that's what they're thinking. Also, Fiers, I think, is under contract for next year, which I don't know that they want to commit to as well. But, you know, I mean, were you outraged about Mike Fiers?
No, I wasn't outraged. I was just curious.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought he was a guy that could have been an upgrade over Felix Hernandez at this point. Or we'll see about Erasmo, maybe. I mean, if you steadfastly believe that Erasmo was better than him, then I guess you will find out. But you know, sometimes bringing in a guy can spark the team a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Fiers is only ARB eligible. He's like third year ARB eligible. So, and he made $6 million. So that would bump up to about $9 million if you wanted to keep him. You could non-tender him, obviously, for next year. But yeah, he's not amazing. I you know, DePoto, kind of when I talked to him this spring, and he had mentioned how much me and you had written about and talked about getting a starter, he just tried to point out that he felt like the guys they had were better than Alex Cobb and Lance Lynn, and for the most part he was kind of right. I mean,
I've acknowledged that he was right, but then it's also a 162 game season.
Yeah.
You know, things change. It's just such a crapshoot when you get a guy at the trade deadline. You just never know. Sometimes the big name goes out there and stinks it up, or you get a huge boost from, you know, Lance Lynn has pitched well for the Yankees. He's been huge for them so far. He could have easily stunk as well, like he did early in the season for the Twins. So you just never know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just a change of address or change of change of address, change of scenery, sorry. And, you know, I would imagine pitching for the Yankees and their run support helps you a lot more than pitching for the Twins as well.
Yeah, I would think that would be good. And now,
Mike Fiers is looking for run support, or Lance Lynn is looking for run support. This is the wrong team to go to.
That's for sure. Well, we got that. I mean, we got the A's there.
Yeah.
On Monday, that looms very, very large. I mean, that's a huge series.
You know who will be pitching for the A's in their bullpen?
Fernando Rodney.
Yes.
There's a lot of saves in that bullpen. I was just reading. They've got like something like 500 saves in that bullpen.
It's sneaky good. I mean, but, you know, Rodney can torpedo an inning really quickly.
Yeah, he's 41 years old now, right? I think I saw that. I mean, he still throws hard, but he's we know what a roller coaster ride he is.
Oh, and he's an adventure.
He's definitely an adventure, and so I mean, now they got Familia, they've got they've got Trinan, they've got him, they've got Lee Trevino, the former golfer, they've got. somebody else too, some other name.
I swear to God, if you make a par or birdie reference when we're in Oakland, I'm going to reach across the desk and slap you.
All right, well, that's an incentive to do it.
Right? I know.
All right, well, we got to talk real quick about the lineup change yesterday.
Oh yeah, wait, one more thing though. So, have you covered? I mean, watching for me, this is like really the first superstar I've covered, like with Felix, to see him kind of, you know, start to degrade a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because have you done it before? It's really odd feeling for me because I'd never done it. Like with Griffey, he was already done when he got here, you know. And then Ichiro left, you know, when he started to really kind of just fall off the cliff. And I'm trying to think who else. I mean, the Mariners haven't had any other superstars in that. So it's a little odd feeling.
Yeah, I mean, there was a certain extent with Edgar.
Yeah.
But he announced his retirement the halfway through the really the only bad year that he had. You know, I Griffey was the guy that came to mind, but you're right. Yes, he had already declined, but he was still Ken Griffey, and it was still jarring to see him in a Mariners uniform and not be the best player in baseball or even a, you know, particularly good player. I think that's the closest comp that I could come to. But yeah, it's one of the sad sagas of sports. It happens to everybody, and to have it happen when you're barely 32, like Felix, that's a young age to hit a wall like that. I mean, it's a testament to how many innings he put up. You know, he was 19 years old when he came up and joined the rotation, and he's been in there on a regular basis ever since. So, I mean, in some ways, it's inevitable. It was inevitable. You put that 200-plus innings a year for a decade. There's not many pitchers anymore that can hold up to that and keep going at that pace.
He had 8 straight years of 200-plus innings. I mean, he never really went on the DL very often. Occasionally, you know, sprained ankle or it was never elbow issues like everybody thought. You know, he had some shoulder issues the last couple of years, but for the most part, during his prime, you could lock him down for 30 starts and 200 innings.
Yeah, and that catches up to you, and I think it's got up to him now, for sure.
So what do you think about the new lineup?
Well, I felt that something had to happen with D. Gordon at the top. You can't have a leadoff hitter who's on base percentage is at 300 and now is dipped under 300. You know, I think back to that very first day when they had the press conference at the spring training luncheon, and he said, "If you're expecting me to walk, Skip, you know, you got the wrong guy." And you know, Service laughed and said, "No, you be you." And you know, it was funny, haha. But he's got under 10 walks, the leadoff hitter in August, and his on base percentage is 300. And he's in a slump, and you know, I'm a little surprised it was Haneker, but he does get on base, and I think he wanted to mix up the lefties and the righties a little bit rather than putting Span at the top. It looked like a genius yesterday. I'm sure it will you know, you had the tweet that where he said that if we score eight, I'm going to keep it permanent. And what do they do? They scored eight. So I think we'll see that same lineup today.
I mean, there might be a small variation, but I think Haniger will be at the top of it, and Span will be batting second. Sometimes like a change like that is it can help. I get so tired of lineup stuff. Like, I really wanted to go out and say, like, I don't care how you would make up the lineup. It doesn't matter. Same with me. It's like, it doesn't matter how I would do the lineup. Cause I'm not looking at everything that they're looking at, you know, in terms of, their recent data or the numbers they use, or just even in talking to players and how they're feeling, if they're banged up. Like Segura the other day admitted, he's like, I'm just beat up and I'm tired, and you know, and he liked having that day. He said he needed it. You know, he didn't want to ask for it. He'd never asked for it, but when they gave it to him, he wasn't going to argue with them about it because he was starting to fatigue a little bit. So, you know, there are reasons why they do it. I think for service, you know, when he started that with D at the top and they had Segura batting second, it just when it worked, when D was on base and Segura was there behind him, I mean, you just kind of can get just, you know, drunk on that almost, because it was so exciting and so many things happened, and you're just sitting there going, well, this will be the game that it kind of works again, because you saw what kind of havoc they could create on the bases, and then they weren't reliant on a home run to win everything, you know, that they could do things. So I can see where that just, you just get enticed by wanting that all the time and just keep hoping that it's going to fix itself. But D's walk rate is lower than it's ever been in his career right now. It's like 1.5. I mean, at least it was like 5% last year.
It's one of the lowest in history. There's a guy who sent you and I that email with
the... I don't read my emails, dude.
At one point this year, it was the second lowest walk rate of someone with a certain amount of at-bats in baseball history. So
I go big or go home.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon looks like a prototypical leadoff guy, you know, fast and all that, but all his on bases it comes from batting average, and when he's slumping like he's slumping now, then he's a liability, because if he's hitting .220, then that's pretty much his on base percentage, and that's what he's been hitting lately. Talk about a guy who needs to maybe reinvent himself. I think it's him, because he has all the tools. I think he's got to stop being so stubborn about drawing walks and realizing that that's what he needs to take his game to the next level and be a superstar. You know, if he had an on-base percentage of .380 or something like that, with the tools that he has now, he'd be he'd be one of the most coveted players in baseball, instead of a guy who is going to get, as it is probably going to be going from team to team when teams decide that they can't live with that offense. And he could be spectacular and electric and all that, and he is hitting close to .300, but at the top of the order, you've got to get on base a little bit.
Well, it's kind of like the Zunino thing. You're not asking him to hit .300. You're just asking him to hit .220. It's like with D. Gordon. You're not even asking him for .380. You'd settle for .345, you know,
yeah,
on an on-base.
Sure.
And I think, you know, if he did have, you know, did get his adjust his approach a little bit more and did get a little bit more selective, I think his batting average would only increase in a lot of ways. It means you're probably hitting better pitches, and, you know, you're less likely, you know, to get that weak roll over to second base or whatever, because you're swinging out a pitch out of the zone. I mean, I understand that it's difficult. And, you know, it's one thing to just sit there and say, oh, yeah, he needs to change his approach. Well, you know, when it's been kind of one way for your entire career, it's not just simple. There are guys that do it. I mean, apparently Rougned Odor has figured it out. But, you know, it's going to take something maybe as drastic as being moved to number nine or struggling to do that. You know, I know that D has been locked into second base, you know, and they've said that, and they're trying to play Cano all over. But I don't think, you know, it's also given his kind of size and how much he can get fatigued. I think, you know, playing Robbie at second base a couple of days and giving D a day off isn't the worst thing in the world either.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking that yesterday too, that, you know, of all the scenarios we've been thinking about with Cano, that one factor I think that none of us really considered was with what you just said, that having him play over D. Gordon, and I think that's going to happen a little bit more than we thought. You also have to keep in mind the fact that Cano is not eligible for the postseason, and that's got to guide them as well. But that doesn't mean that maybe a few days off might help them rejuvenate him a little bit.
It'll be interesting to see. The lineup was fine. I get so lineup analysis every day is like the bane of my existence. People stop blaming me for the lineup. Now they just are offering me suggestions of what it should be, as if like I'm gonna, you know.
Well, the sabermetric people who have studied it have shown that really the lineup, it doesn't hardly matter. The one big thing is that you want your best player to hit second. Your Mike Trout's the most conducive place for them to do the most damage is batting second. But other than that, a lot of it is just a crapshoot.
Yeah. Stacking pancakes, as I like to say, because I like food.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Pancakes. All right. Well, we've been doing this a while, and the odds of your phone dying out again or getting that delay seems high. So we'll end it now. Larry is joining me in Oakland, so we'll maybe do a podcast there. I don't know. Will you fly in tomorrow?
I am flying tomorrow. I'm going to see my parents beforehand. So
okay.
I will meet you in Oakland on Monday.
And meet us at the scenic Oakland Courtyard Marriott.
Are you renting a car?
Yes. Yes, okay. I'll get a car. So
you're going to be the chauffeur then. I'll wait for you.
That's great. So, all right. I will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Extra Innings Podcast. Big thanks to Larry Stone for taking some time out of his day to talk with me about this. Thanks to Midnight Salvage Company, the official house band of the Extra Innings Podcast, for the bumper music, lead-in music. As always, if you want to get a hold of me, you can do so at rdivish@seattletimes.com or hit me up on Twitter @RyanDivish or on Facebook, which is just under my name. So I would leave you my voicemail number at work, but I don't actually check it, so it wouldn't be pretty pointless. And we will talk to you soon.